Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio today on this Medical Monday is Dr. Michael McBiles, a radiologist in practice at Nathan Litauer Hospital in Gloversville, New York, a graduate of New York Medical College at Valhalla, New York. Dr. McBiles completed residency in radiology at the Brooke Army Medical Center at Fort Sam Houston in Houston, Texas, and he joined the team at Nathan Litauer in 2005 to part of today's conversation about radiology. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page at the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can just write us at, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, Dr. McBiles, first of all, thank you so much for being back with us. I know that when you were in the Army, you had a real specialty in nuclear and emergency, the kinds of things that happened in Boston recently. What do you do when you get a whole bunch of casualties?
Well, actually, it's we do very much similar to what we do in other mass casualties, for example, hurricanes, or if there was a other types of terrorist attack. The big difference is that we are very concerned about contamination of both patients and the environment, as well as the hospitals. And so we have to do special things to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So if you have a number of people all at the same time, how do you get them all, you know, into the machines?
Well, a lot of times the thing that we're concerned most about is if there was a dirty bomb or some sort of a terrorist attack, we'd be worried about radiation coming from those radiologically dirty bombs and contaminating the patients. So the big question is, how do you decontaminate them before you contaminate your healthcare providers and the rest of the community? It turns out that a lot of things that we do for a regular patient that comes in, assuming that that patient, for example, is contaminated with raw sewage, would be the same thing we would do for treating radiologic emergencies.
Now, when you have something like the Boston bombings at the Marathon, there you have enough hospital providers so you could sort of divide up the people who have been affected. But what happens if you get 1,000 people?
Well, that is something that there are plans for, both at the state level and at the national level.
But if you told me, you'd have to kill me.
No, I wouldn't. but these and they are actually there are people that that spend their whole lives, and there's an entire corps within the Army composed of people that do nothing but prepare for nuclear, chemical, and biological warfare. Yeah. And they're very serious about it. They have some very good equipment and are very knowledgeable on how to take care of those sort of emergencies.
Well, as a guy who's been trained in this now, you know, I mean, we've got a big country. We've got a lot of problems with a lot of people around the world. We've got people who've tried to do bad things before. So one has to assume that sooner or later it's going to happen, right?
I think you have to. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do to prepare for that.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Right now, your chances of getting in are 100%. So I'll ask the first question, and then we'll go from there. Question number one, there are people who suffer from claustrophobia. They don't want to get inside those machines. How are we solving that?
Well, we're actually solving that by making bigger machines. With the bigger, for example, the MRI machine. If anybody has ever been in one, they realize it's a big donut, and people that are claustrophobic are a little scared to get in there. The way we get around that is to make bigger holes in the donut so that people don't have that claustrophobic feeling. There are machines out there that are actually completely open, don't give quite as good of pictures, and those are the main ways we've been doing it. We've also have very expensive virtual reality goggles that we put on some people, and that helps a lot.
1-800-348-2551. I guess the next question I want to ask you is the dyes. Now, this seems to be a little bit controversial now. There was a time when everybody would say to me, well, the dye doesn't hurt you. Now I think there's more of a give and take on that. Is there?
There absolutely. There are basically two types of dyes that we use. We use the type that we use for CAT scans, which are have iodine in them. Well, the main problem that we have with them is if patients have low kidney function, that could damage their kidneys. So we're very careful about screening patients with low kidney function. There's a very similar problem with the MRI dyes in that not that it would these dyes hurt the kidneys particularly, but in patients with renal failure, they can cause a life-threatening illness just because of the fact that you get the dye. And so we we look at those people very carefully too beforehand.
What for those people who are uninitiated in this, what's the difference between the machines? What do you use a CAT scan for and an MRI for?
Well, in many ways, they look at a lot of the same things, but there are things that an MRI can see that a CAT scan can't see very well, mainly having to do with the MRI machine with neurologic issues and musculoskeletal and back issues, some of which I know you have, Alan.
Yes. So the CAT scan looks at soft tissue?
The CAT scan is very good. Is good for soft tissue, but there are many things that an MRI machine can see that a CAT scan can't see in soft tissues.
Right, and the number here is 1-800-348-2551. By the end of the show, every line will be used, and then you'll be sorry, and you won't be able to get in. Okay, so recently we saw two Capital Region men accused of planning to build an X-ray weapon. Is that feasible?
It's feasible. I've had a lot of discussion amongst the radiologists about that as to whether or not it actually would perform as billed to kill people. It's clear that that type of a device could be built and could cause some harm, but as far as a deadly X-ray beam that's going to kill people the next day, there's a lot of questions about whether that's technologically possible, mainly because these X-ray machines require an awful lot of electricity. I think the terrorists were talking about putting this on the back of a truck. And the machines themselves are very big, so getting them into one little spot, there's some questions where that is possible.
But this seems to have been more of a scam than it was a reality, don't you think?
I think that perhaps it was oversold a little bit.
Okay, so when hospitals like yours, it's a fairly small hospital in Glover's Hill, New York, have to plan for this kind of thing, what do they do? I mean, there's only one of you, right?
Well, I have an awful lot of help. The emergency room personnel that aren't necessarily trained an awful lot in radiation are actually very well trained in these mass casualty situations. Mm-hmm. We're required to run drills on a yearly basis. We recently had one at Nathan Litauer. Looking at mass casualty, I believe there was one where there was a bus that had crashed, and that was the scenario.
Right. I'm always interested in these planning things as opposed, to
the real thing.
To the real thing. Anyway, okay, so what is the medical community doing to limit radiation, problems from routine medical procedures?
Well, that's something that's really come to the fore in the last 10 years. I wouldn't say that people were lackadaisical about radiation, but I think that nowadays it's recognized that there are some radiologic procedures and some equipment, for example, the CAT scanners, that give people a fair amount of radiation, and we should try to limit that. Mainly by changing the way the machine works and not quite giving as much radiation as perhaps we had done 15 years ago.
So you got these three. You got the MRI, you got the CAT scan, and you have, regular good old chest X-rays.
That's right.
Which give you the most radiation?
Without a doubt, most likely, for most patients, it's going to be the CAT scan. Fluoroscopy in operations can give a fair amount, but not as much as, say, a CAT scan in general.
Well, let's go to Matthew in Alford, my old hometown. Matthew, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. I really love trees and clouds, and I was wondering if there was anything about radiology that could help me deepen my appreciation for them.
I'm not quite sure I get it, so maybe you could help me on that.
Well, I just was... When I look at clouds, seem, I guess there's that connection with the nuclear bomb and the cloud and the forms. Is there anything about the radiation that is...
Anything from the radiation machines that we know about that help form clouds in the air?
Well, also, yes, and also I've heard recently that, about cannons that break up clouds for farmers.
Well, I think we're going to pass on this one, Matthew. We're going to let you put it in our minds, and maybe we'll think about it for the next time, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Okay. Let's go to Pam in Queensbury. Pam, you're on.
I kind of have two questions. I don't know if I'll have time for both.
No, because we're up against a little bit of a break, but go ahead. Go ahead.
It is. I know from working in the medical field that you see these... workers coming in with a cart dragging in their the stuff that it takes to do your CAT scans or your MRIs. And just from my education, I guess the question is that there's nuclear waste after doing these tests. You see it coming in and coming out. How do you prevent the potential for a nuclear a dirty bomb situation when you have
they are
coming in and out of a hospital, so to speak.
You're right, Pam. Those are two different questions. The first question is, we worry about what we do with every nuclear waste. What do we do with the stuff that's left over?
Well, that's actually that's a good question, because I wanted to try and dispel some myths that are out there. First of all, all of the X-ray machines that we have, the CT scanners, the X-ray machines that do your chest X-rays, that sort of thing, they do not cause you to be radioactive or anything else around them to be radioactive. Mm-hmm. The only time that they produce radiation is when you turn the switch on. And so that's where we put our all of our eggs in one basket, and we try and make sure that when the machines are on, everybody is shielded well.
Yes, but are there components of it that when they're used, I think Pam's question is, have to be dealt with? In other words, is there residual waste that have to go somewhere?
Not in those machines, but there is medical waste that involves radioactive materials that in a subset of radiology called nuclear medicine.
Sure.
Where we inject people with radioactivity to take a look at their bones or their kidneys or whatever, that waste does have to be dealt with and has to be dealt with under very stringent regulations.
But the second half of your question, Pam, is?
You pretty well hit it on the head.
Okay.
With that one, I guess the second one is totally unrelated. That is, my son is in the Navy. He's a submariner.
Uh-huh.
Am I going up?
No, go.
Okay, and he's also a diver in the Navy, and he had the unfortunate call to duty to have to dive not once but at least twice, maybe three times, at Fukushima. If he were your son, would you be concerned about the amount of plutonium or radiation that he's been exposed to in the line of duty if he were to come in and need to get some sort of an X-ray test?
Interesting question.
Yeah, that is a good question. Yeah. As it turns out, that has been looked at. There are some areas around the Fukushima plant that are still radioactive, and there was a spill of waste into the seawater in that area. However, that amount of radiation that the diver, for example, would be exposed to in that short amount of time is not enough to cause any particular concern. They would have to be exposed for a long time, swallow the seawater, that sort of thing, in order, even if it was particularly radioactive.
And yet, my answer to your question as a PhD, as a medical doctor, would be, you never know. I mean, you know, the answer is that did we really know about Agent Orange in Vietnam? And it turns out much later that, you know, it certainly wasn't helpful to an awful lot of people. So doctor, don't we always leave ourselves an out and say, who knows?
Well, we actually do. But as it turns out, the amount of radiation that we're talking about, there are very large amounts of radiation that for example, in situations where you have an atomic bomb going off.
Sure.
And you have the very low amounts of radiation that we talk about in medicine. the things that we worry about are those between those areas where a dirty bomb or some sort of medical waste, a nuclear fuel rod was somehow, or some sort of a cobalt, a radioactive cobalt metal, which had gone into radiation treatment equipment, somehow that gets lost or somewhere else. And that has happened in the past. Actually, it happened in the 50s when we weren't quite as up on these sort of things as they were, as we should be. Since that time, actually, radiation, as you can imagine, is something that, using your Agent Orange example, we didn't know much about Agent Orange. It was something that sort of invented during that time. We sent it off to Vietnam and we used it. Whereas actually there's a fair amount, and even then, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, there's a lot known about radiation, and we were fairly careful even then.
Yeah. Well, Pam, thanks for the great questions. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the great program.
Thanks again.
Have a great day.
Yeah. We are going to take a short break. We will be right back, but you have a very good chance of getting in right now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Want to hear from you. Give us a call.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers, Poughkeepsie, celebrating 100 years serving the healthcare needs of the community, including the Red L Cancer Care Center, Emergency and Trauma Care, and Advanced Robotic Surgery, SFHospital.org. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley, 12 guest rooms with modern amenities located close to historic landmarks, the1850house.com. Skidmore College Master's Program offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields, masters@skidmore.edu. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org. Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events.
And thanks to the magic provided by our Zachary, we are here and taking your calls. The phones are all ringing right now, and as soon as we can report back to you on the name of one of those people, we will. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So 1-800-348-2551. Okay, and we'll go to Margaret in Old Chatham. Okay, Margaret, number two, I think. Is that number two? Number two? Yeah. Okay, Margaret, you're on.
Hi. My husband and I have both had what they call fast CAT scans or calcium scoring tests for heart issues. And I guess they're pretty effective. My husband's cardiac issues were diagnosed through one. And I'm wondering why, if they're so effective, if the doctor knows why they're not covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Because when I had one, they tell me, they won't pay. You have to pay for it. I said, okay, if it's going to extend my life, fine. Go ahead.
Well, you're talking about something that I try and stay away from, which is billing and reimbursement in insurance companies, because you have that as a specialty in itself. I do know that is the case, that that particular scan that you had, which is it's called a calcium scoring scan, and it looks at the amount of calcium within the coronary arteries. There's still some question as to exactly how useful it is based upon the radiation risk. It is a good screening test.
So on the one hand, you have the CAT scan and the radiation, and on the other hand, you have the screening.
That's correct.
Which is more important, but also the third hand, if you have a third hand, you have greedy insurance companies that aren't going to pay for anything if they don't have to.
That's correct.
Right. Yeah. My husband's score was like 2,400. And I think the normal score is somewhere between 200 and 400.
Yeah,
and he went in and had a quadruple bypass the next day. So I think it's a great test, but
saved his life.
Yeah.
I would guess, though, that that before he went into that test, he did have some risk factors, and there was a question in the doctor's mind as to whether or not he was in that high risk group or the low risk group.
Well, he has a history, family history, but he had no symptoms, nothing.
Sure, and family history is just one part of the risk factors. And so usually these tests are ordered when there's a, the doctor is sort of on the fence as to whether or not there's a significant disease or not. The calcium scoring test that you're talking about can push you over into one or the other and push you into a group. For example, if he had a calcium score of zero, and I've seen many of those in that particular age group, everybody would rejoice because he's put himself into a lower area.
Well, Margaret, how much did it cost?
$300.
Yeah, doesn't sound and, like the end of the world to save your life.
It's not the end of the world. And I had one, and mine was also 300, and my score was zero. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, Margaret, you are a princess to call and talk to us about this because it's a very interesting question. Thanks again.
It's an interesting test, and I think people should know about it.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks.
And we'll go to John in Fishkill. John in Fishkill, you're on.
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
So far, so good.
All right.
Don't make it worse. Yeah.
It might not be up to me. I had a comment, sort of a complaint. Now, I know the difference. I know a radiologist is not the same as an X-ray technician, particularly in the ER. I've had this issue, and everybody else I've known that's broken a bone and ended up in the ER has had the same complaint. When they go in to get X-rayed, and you know, it's not just this isn't just the same hospital, so it isn't just one technician that does this, but they tend to assume that whoever comes in, you're in a lot of pain, they assume that, oh, it's just a sprain, or at least their bedside manner is, it's probably not broken. And everybody I've talked to kind of gets the same thing. Oh, it's probably not broken. And then they manhandle you. I remember when I broke my ankle, a guy wanted to get every single angle of X-ray shot, and I understand you need to get a good picture, but I'm talking about turning my foot left. And
okay,
right,
okay,
right,
I think
left.
We got okay. We got it. Yeah, we got it, John. Now let's get the answer, Mike.
Okay, the first thing I would say is I hope that doesn't happen when you go to the hospitals that I practice, because we really try and train the technologists to respect the patients and be very careful about that, because one patient could have the same symptoms, could have a bad break, and the other could just have a sprain.
Sure.
That's really something that we try and teach our people. And if I knew that somebody like that was doing that in my hospital, I would, retrain them.
Or fire them.
No.
Right. So, okay. So, you raise an interesting question, Doc, and that is that the technicians are often the ones that do this work as opposed to the radiologist, right? The radiologist is a supervisor, reads the results, but often, so what does it take to be a technologist as opposed to a doctor?
Well, and that's a good point, Alan, just because, and this is the last thing I'll say, is just because it took me the last time a week for an actual radiologist, somebody who knew how to read the X-ray, to get a diagnosis of a break. And in the meantime, they said, oh, it's probably fine, just take a little
Oh, okay, all right. So Mike?
So I'll take your response off.
No,
air.
No, don't, because that's not the way we do it. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay sure.
As far as the what did it take to become a technologist, they're actually fairly well trained. You have to have at least 2 years of college. They have to go through another year at least of training.
I wouldn't think if you were a political science major, it would help you that much in technology. Go ahead.
We'll take you in. We'll take you in if you
okay.
want. They actually are fairly well trained, and they are. This is not something that you can go into out of high school with D's.
Yeah.
They are not going to let you do that. They're fairly well paid for their amount of training. They're very well trained in the vast majority of the time.
And they have to wear a badge, right, so they know if they're getting a radiation dose.
We all do.
Yes.
When we work with radiation at all times.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, John, thank you for the call. Great call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it.
All right. Let's go to Ray in Northern Maine. Hey.
Well, I'm not really in Northern Maine.
I had a feeling you weren't. Go ahead.
I can't wait to get back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yup. Oh, yup.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have what has been referred to as, this is high-tech terminology, a locked shoulder.
Okay.
Are you...
Yeah, yeah.
You know
okay.
what that
yeah,
is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, there are...
Okay. Well, I had a whitewater kayaking accident years ago, And since then, occasionally, this occurs. Mm-hmm. And this is probably the worst that I've ever had.
Okay, so your question, Ray, your question
my
is...
My question is this. The shoulder's just been looked at and moved around, range of motion. I've not had any imaging. I'm a very serious stringed instrument musician,
oh,
and I'm very concerned. I think that some form, I don't know which would be best, the soft tissue in my shoulder would put me at ease for sure. To see if there's any little tiny soft tissue damage that you...
Okay, hey, Ray. Ray, only because there are a lot of people behind you, I'm going to cut you off here. Hold on. Just stay there, and we'll go to the doctor, and let's ask him what he would recommend. Go ahead, doctor.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I wouldn't necessarily recommend an imaging study just yet. The reason I say that is that a lot of imaging is directed by the physical examination. In fact, it all is.
Yeah.
And just because somebody hurts in their back doesn't mean they're going to get an MRI. Just because I got an injury to my shoulder doesn't necessarily mean I need an MRI. A lot of this has to do with the physical examination and the history. Generally, an orthopod or an orthopedist are the people to talk to about that. They're the experts on that. I don't even pretend to be one. But I have seen
an orthopod.
Okay, did they recommend anything?
No, but because of my musical background, I'm deeply concerned, and I would like to be reassured.
Yeah.
Of small soft tissue damage.
Okay, you said that already.
Okay.
But now risk becomes the important here in terms of what is the risk to you as a patient from the radiology versus the assurance, Doc?
Well, if it involves an MRI machine, there's no radiation risk.
Okay.
If it involves a CT scan or an X-ray machine, there is some risk. Really, which one is appropriate in your particular case? Again, really depends upon what the doctor found in the physical examination.
But of course, one can go doctor shopping. We all know that.
Sure,
you can find a doctor who likes to reassure every patient and say, "Sure, go take it. What is no skin off my back?"
What was the format that you suggested doesn't have a serious radiological effect?
That's the MRI machine, and it can be good in certain areas. But again, I wouldn't necessarily go at it willy-nilly. I think what they're looking for is very, very closely determined by what they find on their examination.
Yeah. Okay, Ray, we've been over this a couple of times, and we thank you so much for calling. Good luck. I watched Joshua Bell the other night at Tanglewood, and boy, I wouldn't want him. Yeah, we were sitting right in front of him.
I can't imagine conducting with a shoulder like this, let alone playing.
Well, indeed. He was playing, and Frugos de Burgos was conducting, and they were both good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
One of the great musicians of all time, and Joshua Bell.
Oh, well, there's nobody better. I don't think there's a better violin player in the world right now. Okay, let's go to Jeff in Great Barrington. Okay, Jeff, are you on?
I think I'm on, Alan. I'm on the road on the Mass Pike, but can you hear me all right?
Yeah, be careful because they're crazy out there.
My question has to do with the dyes, the iodine-based dyes that are used for many tests because of a shellfish allergy I have.
Oh.
Are there alternatives to those dyes for some of these tests?
Yes, actually, the first thing I want to disabuse you of is that a shellfish allergy has anything at all to do with an iodine allergy for an X-ray dye.
Interesting.
There are still places that even ask that question, but it's been shown fairly conclusively that it's not the iodine in the fish, it's the protein that's in the fish that causes the allergy and has absolutely nothing to do with iodine. So I would not worry one bit about doing a scan that requires iodine contrast.
Well, should he worry about eating sushi?
Yes.
Boy, with the great sushi restaurant we have in Great Barrington, that's not a good diagnosis.
Not for me. I stay away from those places, Alan.
Yeah.
Okay.
About 10 years ago, I did have a reaction to a castorization, and I was wondering if, so it wasn't shellfish, could I be tested for iodine sensitivity before these tests?
Actually, there is no good test for that. We don't, as far as I know, there are no allergy tests, skin tests, and that sort of thing. I know a little bit about this. My wife has undergone these testing, and so have I. So I would think that if that was available, they would have tested me given my risk in this. But
okay.
No.
Hey,
right.
Jeff, thank you for the call, and say hello to everybody in Great Barrington today because I feel badly that I'm not there. Talk to you soon.
I will.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Susan in Warwick. Okay, Susan, go.
Hi. It's interesting, the fellow just ahead of me almost took my question. I've had an allergic reaction to an MRI that caused a severe rash, bloodshot eyes, and ultimately all the skin on my body peeled off. It took 2 weeks and cost me 2 weeks out of work. I was also asked, do I have an allergic reaction to shellfish, when I protested the first time because I had a bad reaction with just nausea for a previous MRI many years ago. But only a few years that passed from now, I had this severe reaction to an MRI, and now I do not want to have an MRI, and I would like to know if there is an alternative, because the one doctor who said it was the MRI dye told me it had to do with the specific gravity of that dye. So now when I refuse MRIs or any offer to those, I am asked what kind of dye. I don't know. How do I respond to this, and how do I convince them I do not want to go through that again?
Okay, well, many MRI procedures do not require dyes. They have new procedures out there, new techniques with the MRI machines that allow us to do the scan without dye.
And the better the machine, obviously, the less the need.
Right? Yeah, the less the need. And as far as MRI, reactions to MRI dyes, that is actually very rare, much rarer than reactions to iodine dyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you had one, I've been practicing for quite a while here, and I've only seen one reaction, and it was never as severe as the one that you mentioned. So you're in an unusual situation. You seem to have a reaction to a lot of different things. If you have a shellfish allergy and perhaps the MRI.
No, I don't have a shellfish allergy. That was the point. I was asked that question.
Well,
was told no. And, this is fine. This is a different kind of dye. And the reaction was this much worse.
Well, the question for Susan, I think, is, or for you, Doc, is it possible that it wasn't from the dye but from the machine?
No, it's not from the machine. It would be from the dye. That's sort of symptoms that she's talking about.
Hey, Susan, I just want to caution you with one thing. You know what they used to do before MRIs and CAT scans, right? They did what they called exploratory surgery, and I don't think you wanted that.
You're right. But, it's getting to where if they keep trying to get this poison in me and then pollute me, maybe I'll go for exploratory surgery.
Maybe. Okay. Hey, thank you, Susan, for calling. Great question. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, let's go to take a break, and then we'll be back. 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Middletown Medical with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville for the treatment of injuries and illness. Minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours. MiddletownMedical.com for insurance providers. Marriott Town Plaza Suites, Albany Downtown, offering studio, 1 and 2 bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations. American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health. AmericanMeditation.org. The Blue Rock Restaurant, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, Chef Chris Ramirez, creating new American cuisine and handcrafted desserts, wine and beer from local to worldwide, live jazz Fridays, thebluerockrestaurant.com. Express Pediatrics Highland, walk-in urgent care for children, specializing in summer trauma care including fractures, rashes, wounds, asthma, sports injuries, and more. ExpressPediatrics.com.
Here we are, back on the air, and we're going to go to Bob from East Nassau. Okay, Bob, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey.
Question for you on controlling unnecessary X-ray exposure. There's two situations, of course, non-emergency. I just did one of these with a cervical series where they had done an MRI, and I had provided them previously with a disc with the conventional exposures, and so I refused another set of conventional exposures. But 2 years ago, I was admitted through the emergency room of an Albany hospital, and with severe abdominal pain. And on that one, they gave me a CT scan and some conventional X-rays. And then about a few hours later, they had me drink the liquid, which is, I believe, the iodine clarifier that you were talking about. And back we go to the CT machine. And on the way down the hall, one of the attendants says, why didn't they do this right the first time? So that was 2 days of that sort of conduct, and I checked out. And a couple days later, entered another Albany hospital. Turns out I had, at that point, after I was discharged from hospital two, I had 5 CT scans and I think 7 conventionals. I went back in a few months later with the same abdominal pain. This was small intestine blockage, operation, the whole deal. I'm back in 3 or 4 months later at hospital number 2 and with the same pain, and they're suggesting a CT scan. And I questioned why, and the doctor at the time said, it's a wonderful diagnostic tool. And I said, well, I'm very concerned about radiation. And his response was, well, that wouldn't catch up to you with cancer or anything for probably 20 years. So the question is,
how many of those 20 years have you used up?
About 2.
Okay, Mike, let's go to the doctor. Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. Actually, the issues of whether, and I'm trying to reconstruct your what happened to you during the during your hospitalization. Sometimes we give contrast, sometimes we don't. Depending upon what the doctor thinks up front before the scan is whether they choose to give these dyes. The one that you were given orally is actually not iodine. It was probably barium, which is a different sort of inert substance that has almost no risk at all. And what happens during these procedures is sometimes the doctor is wrong on their first go through, their first theory as to what's going on with you. They perhaps chose to do it with or without contrast, and then realized that sometimes even giving contrast, you think that would be a better test. It actually is a worse test because it obscures things.
A couple of follow-ups. Number one, in the old days, I'm old, one of the things that they used to do was give you barium for everything. It tasted like chalk. I remember that. How come we don't see that anymore?
Well, you just haven't been to enough hospitals, Alan.
Yeah.
There actually is a fair amount of barium still, but not quite as much as it had. And actually, the doctor that talked to our caller on the phone here was absolutely right in that CT scanning has absolutely transformed emergency medicine. There's just no doubt about it. There were times when I started practicing medicine 30 years ago when we were guessing as to whether a patient has appendicitis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 99.9% of the time, because of CT scanning, we can make that diagnosis and many, many more. Of course, the problem is the radiation risk, and
well,
it's not insignificant.
I was going to say, Bob raises an interesting question, which we all want to know the answer to. How much is too much? In other words, if over your lifetime you've had 25 MRIs, is that too much?
That's a lot. That's a fair amount of radiation. And
right.
I don't think anybody out there would disagree that it's a fair amount of radiation. The question is that a dangerous amount of radiation? What is your risk? The fact is, although we think that although CT scans are probably the most radiation-laden routine study that we do, on the order of CT scan is probably equivalent to somewhere between 50 and 100 chest X-rays.
Interesting,
yes.
Yeah.
And so when you get into those numbers, we do start worrying about radiation risk. And there are actually many patients that come to different, as an example, that come to different hospitals. They're medical attention seekers, and they will go to one hospital and ask for a CAT scan.
Whoa.
There are times when I have called emergency room doctors because we just happen to know that this person is a frequent flyer. and say, do you really want this CAT scan? Because he's had 25 in the last 3 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is that has happened. But nevertheless, I think that it's not unreasonable to challenge your doctor as to whether or not you really need that CAT scan. But there is also no doubt that that CAT scanning has transformed medicine.
Bob, you want to come back real quick?
Thanks. Is there any good way? And I try to be a well-informed patient, and I try to really take care of myself in order to, you know, do my part to help my doctor do her part. But the bottom line is, when you're flat in your back and you've got pain and you don't know what's going on, and this was my first adult hospitalization and major surgery, I've got I'm probably going to have a cervical thing coming up out your way soon. But,
well, if there's a good place to go, it's to Nathan Littower. I can tell you that much.
Okay.
I mean that. That's where I did mine. Yeah.
No, I that's where I'm headed tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is there any way to get better control of this, to get more rational discussion going on in that emergency situation?
Well, you know what, Bob? I think it's greater than even that question. I think the question is that there's a certain amount of expertise, in quotes, that is offered by all doctors about don't worry about the risk. And I'm not only talking about radiology. I'm talking about you read something in the paper and it says the risk for cancer is greater if you've taken the proton pump inhibitors or whatever they are, you know, over your life. And you say, and the doctor says, oh, no, come on. This is one of the most popular drugs in the history of mankind. And so what do? You listen to the doctor. What else can you do? But your question is profound. It really is.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you got on the call, so I got off the phone. And thank you both very much.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Appreciate
it. Take care.
Yeah. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. I said excellent. Okay, let's go to Richard in Sandersfield, Massachusetts. Okay, Richard, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I had a question, I guess, probably somewhat answered by your just previous patient. On the number of CAT scans you can safely receive, I've had gastrointestinal disease, and I'm probably up to 5 so far.
You're a piker.
Uh-oh. Okay, so... And then another question is on your body mass. If you're fairly thin or fairly fat, can they adjust the amount of radiation you receive, you know, based on your body mass?
Good question.
Yeah. And the answer is yes and yes. They can do they can adjust it, and they do adjust it. The people that have the most risk, as far as I'm concerned, are young children. And we decrease the radiation dose on CAT scans up to a quarter of what we give an adult.
So just to go through something, I think there may have been a slip of the tongue a few seconds ago when I asked you a question, which was, how many MRIs is too much? And is 25 MRIs too much? And you sort of, in terms of radiation, did you mean MRIs or CAT scans?
I meant there's really no significant radiation.
From an MRI.
MRI.
Right.
They're actually, when I say radiation, I must be careful, because what I really mean is the radiation that people think of, which is ionizing radiation, the bad kind of radiation. We work with, quite honestly, we work with radiation all the time. We work with light, which is radiation, ultrasound waves, which are a type of radiation. And so I have to be careful when I say that. And in fact, in MRI machines, we beam microwaves into people.
Now, don't you have to also check the machines a lot to make sure that they're not doing bad things? I read some story years back about some of the CAT scan machines which had not been checked out in other places. I'm not certainly talking about your hospital.
That's correct. Actually, that's fairly well looked at. And in order to be accredited, you have to have your machines looked at by a medical physicist who are people that is their job, is to make sure that that radiation is treated safely.
A lot?
I'm sorry?
Do they have to do it regularly, or do you?
Yes. They, and in order to get accredited through the American College of Radiology nowadays, actually, and they want to do that because that's the way hospitals get reimbursed, they have to go through this drill to get their machines looked at and accredited.
Well, Mike, thank you for that. Let us go to, I don't know, let's go to Ms. Winkeller. Okay, to Mike in Schenectady. Okay, Mike in Schenectady, you're on. Go.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
3 years ago, I had prostate cancer.
Uh-huh.
And I view radiation as my friend, I guess, but I want to ask your opinion of it. What I did have was the radiation. I did have seed implementation. And after that, after 6 weeks of that creating some havoc in my system, then I had 5 weeks of external beam every day, Monday through Friday. Is this, and I never thought of worrying about what radiation would do to me, but, and I can't, if I fly, I have to have a certain card. A lot of it, they said, would last 1 year, the effects of radiation. It's been three now, but if I put a card, if I go out to a casino and put a gambling card into my pocket, it's stripped of its,
wow,
all the power. It never works again for me.
Wow.
Okay, you're in that group of patients that we're not talking about diagnostic x-rays.
Yeah, yeah.
We're actually talking about therapeutic doses, where we're giving huge doses to specific body parts because we want to kill something, in your case, prostate cancer. There's little doubt that there is some elevated risk based upon that, because those seeds that you had and the external beam has to get there somewhere, and it has to get through some sort of tissue to do that.
Well, who puts it in there?
Specially trained doctors, okay, and technicians.
Oh yeah, it was an oncologist radiologist.
Right. Now these are actually it was a radiation, most likely an irradiation oncologist. These guys are specially trained to do that, and they work with compared to the amount of radiation that I work with every day, they work with huge amounts, and they're very careful about that. And there's no doubt that your cancer risk has gone up after these treatments. Nevertheless, the risk of not getting your treatment, which is death.
Well, not necessarily if you had chosen something else. You could choose, for example, surgery.
That's correct.
As opposed to...
Surgery was the only other, yes, that yes. was the other choice.
That's correct. And surgery does have its own,
yeah,
its own problems.
Yeah, you can become,
incontinent, impotent. There are many. Things. And so these are questions. These are actually questions. And I'm not one to sit down and talk to about that specific specialty right now, but that is actually an area of great controversy right now in medicine.
Sure. Well,
about prostate cancer.
The older you get, the more the impotence is probably means less, don't you think?
I didn't really want the removal. I just preferred the other way. I was worried about the consequences on both sides. I really didn't think about any cancer coming from the radiation,
yeah,
because the other, and they were both worked together, both surgeons. One, I think I realized surgeons want to cut, and radiologists want to radiate, and they're both great doctors, both fantastic, rated very well in Albany. So, I mean, yeah, I took my risk, but I'm grateful, but I did take that radiation. Yeah.
And I think the doctors are, the important thing to remember is that they are thinking about this risk. This is not something to be undertaken lightly.
Right.
If you were if you had a similar situation, you were much younger, that would be a different story, because although it's not true that you don't have to worry about these things for 20 years, because some cancers would come earlier, some would come later.
Right.
The fact is that there is a risk, and we have to treat each patient separately, because the risk of not doing something is high.
Right, and I was 54 at the time. They considered that young. They said you have to do something, they said worst case scenario, if you did nothing, you could die in 5 years.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
That's
hey, Mike,
so.
Thank you.
But anyway, thank you, guys. I really appreciate the conversation.
Well,
thanks.
We appreciate you.
For listening
Mike.
To me. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Let's go to Julie in upstate. Well, you know, this upstate business, Julie, gets me because, you know, somebody says they're from upstate New York. That could be Yonkers.
Beacon.
Beacon. Gotcha. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So when my daughter was about two, she fell down some concrete stairs, and she went to the doctors, and it was the day after, because she had thrown up and she was dizzy, so I was worried about a concussion. So she went to the doctors, and she got a CAT scan, and they told me that after two CAT scans for the brain, after two, you start getting a risk for tumors.
Okay, hey, Julie, only because we're up against it now, I'm going to ask Mike to respond to that. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all... there actually is a risk from one CAT scan, or even a very small risk for even a chest x-ray. The question is whether this risk is real, because we actually really don't know, given our current knowledge. We're trying to extrapolate from very high doses from the atomic bomb survivors.
Mm.
It's thought, for example, in the worst case scenario, that getting a CAT scan of the head increases your risk of cancer maybe 0.05%. on top of a 20% risk that you have in your lifetime. That's a so small a risk that we really haven't had been able to determine that it really exists. A lot of these are theoretic risks.
Yeah. Hey, Julie, I think you could breathe a little bit better about that. And we thank you, and I wish we could stay on, but we're out of time. Thank you very much, Julie.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. We are, as I said, out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in today, and I mean that. I love hearing from you. I would also like to thank Dr. Michael McBiles, or Mike, his given name, McBiles, for joining us. The support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Again, thanks for joining us on the Vox Popper. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Tip your hat, Zachary. Your calls were answered by Callie Winkeller. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a little bit of the fabulous Vox Pop theme, followed by maybe a promo, followed by the news. Thank you and goodbye.